Welcome back for our second episode of Lions Collective here on the Lions Collective YouTube channel. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi from Crunch Time Sports, joined alongside me, Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, and Will Birchfield from 97.1 The Ticket. We are back for a second episode, a bonus episode, if you will, to recap and talk more about the Brad Holmes interview. So if you're watching and you're not subscribed, what are you doing? Hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, because we're going to share some of the things he talked about and just kind of our thoughts on the interview. But how are we doing today, fellas?
Doing good. I wanted to show off this 99 degree weather here in Arizona. I don't know what you guys are dealing with.
You outside right now?
Yeah.
I think it's been like thunderstorming the last couple hours over here.
Yeah.
So jealous of that.
Big week for the collective, huh?
Yeah, you can tell Justin's over here smiling. You can tell that weather's changing him up already, man. That's what that nice weather does. I swear. Storming over here. Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, gnarly.
But we have plenty to get into. We'll get into some of our takeaways. I guess just now that we're basically 48 plus hours removed from posting the interview, I know it's, you know, everyone's been talking about it, and it's awesome because, you know, the people get to see. You know, I think another side of Brad Holmes, usually we get to see those national interviews, but it was awesome to be able to kind of, you know, get to speak to him and ask a lot of things that I think fans were wondering. So now that we're 48 plus hours, where maybe some of your guys' maybe takeaways from the interview, thoughts on anything that maybe stood out to you now that we haven't really got a chance to talk about the interview since. So what are some things that came to your guys' mind?
I'm going to get a little long-winded here, guys, and I just want to kind of apologize right off the bat because I just, you know, I feel like there's a lot of thoughts to collect on the free agency angle. But
take us to 6:30.
Yeah, Will's got to bounce. He might disappear midway to this point. But like, you know, obviously we focused on kind of the additions or the lack thereof in several areas, and you know, the big thing that I kind of distilled from it with Brad talking about his horizontals and his vertical stacking of the board is they prioritized offensive line, and with the budget that they had, that's kind of where they pushed their chips, and the other areas, I don't say got neglected, they filled them, but with what I think he would call as tier 2, 3, and 4 players, right? And so I look at the defense, and either you're going to go offensive line, you're going to go defense, you're going to leave yourself or put yourself kind of in a corner to need to address those, the other position in the draft. And I think they got a guy in Wanham. We see the fit as a run stopper, right? We understand that. But they still have this kind of clear and obvious need for a pass rusher. I don't think they're going to find that in free agency. I think it's something that they're going to have to address in the draft. And so, you know, I look at it here as this bigger picture, and kind of how I presented to Brad is I think you can be reasonably proud of these defensive gems you've mined over the course of your tenure, right? You've got guys like Anzalone, Muhammad, Amik, Rocky Sin, Charles Harris, Roy Lopez, guys that they didn't pay a whole lot. Nobody thought a lot about them on the outside, whether they were damaged because of injury or things to prove. And they were successful. And what we kind of got out of Brad is that they're banking on that again in a large way on the defense. They didn't make any obvious upgrades to the defense, other than maybe Wanham's availability in terms of just durability and on that front. But you have plenty of signings that didn't work out defensively over the years too. You had Cam Sutton and Emmanuel Mosley and Davenport twice and Mike Hughes, like guys that just didn't work out. And it just feels like the way that they've built this defense, they need all these guys to kind of hit, to climb out of the bottom half of the league, to get to the top half of the league of the scoring defense. So they need Roger McCreary to hit. They need Christian Izzian to hit. They need Peyton Turner to some degree to hit. They don't need a star, but they need a rotational player. Damone Clark has to contribute in some ways. And maybe I can throw Malcolm Rodriguez in there too, because you know it's the first name I'm thinking about is the replacement to Anzalone. But you knew what you had in Anzalone. You knew what you had in Muhammad to an extent. You knew what you had in Amik Robertson. And now you have lesser players at a proven level. Their contracts, I think, still reflect that, as I presented to Brad. And so you've really gone, or you're going into the draft now where you have to find impact. One, probably two impact players, I think, for this defense to take the step forward that it needs to take to get this roster collectively to a championship caliber again.
Yeah, I agree with all that, Justin. I feel like, I mean, hearing Brad talk, I think my biggest takeaway was their financial situation is a lot more dire than a lot of us thought. And, you know, it's easy to say that, like, they're saving this money for their future players. But when you hear Brad break it down the way, like, you know, say you have a $20 million budget, you can go after that one tier one player, which he didn't name any names, but my mind immediately went to Tyler Linderbaum. A lot of people wanted the Lions to get him. It's like, yeah, you can operate in that tier if you want. If you can create the space you want to get that one guy, but if that's just your one addition, then your team's not really getting better. And so they chose to kind of sprinkle those resources to multiple different positions. And if you look at some of the positions that we thought they needed to address, whether it was center, tackle, edge, safety, linebacker, when Khalif left, receiver, you know, like, they had a lot of needs that kind of opened up here, and they've done a decent job filling that. Now, it's not the high-end names that people want, but in terms of just adding bodies and capable players that can help your team in the short term, I think they did that with a lot of those one-year deals. Another thing Brad said was we really weren't in a position to hand out a ton of multi-year deals, and really it was just one in the end with Cade Mays. And so I agree. Like, when he said, you know, I know Birchie asked, you know, AQM versus Wanham, it really wasn't that per Brad. It was – when we went out and got Cade Mays and Larry Borum, like, those two moves combined, what, like $13 million, $14 million, that kind of took them out of that maybe tier two, tier three edge market. And they had to bring in a guy like DJ Wanham, who they think has upside. And by the way, I think the Lions are higher on Wanham than a lot of people out there. I think when you look at what he did in Minnesota, getting, you know, eight sacks opposite of Daniel Hunter, I think Brad and company think that he can probably have a similar production opposite of an elite edge rusher like Aiden Hutchinson. So, I think my mind went to the financials. It's like, man, this is dire. They are really saving this money. And I know everyone doesn't want to hear that, but that was abundantly clear when he kept coming back to it. You know, that's kind of where my mind went for that interview.
Yeah, I kept coming back to the fact that the Lions lost their identity last season. And I think they lost it on both sides of the ball. Offensively, they lost the ability to control the line of scrimmage, which is what propelled them in the first place to contender status. And defensively, they lost the ability in the biggest games of the year to stop the run, which was the one thing they have always done pretty to very well under Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, dating back 3 years now. And coming out of the moves they made this offseason, and then especially coming out of that interview on Tuesday, it struck me that they wanted to return themselves to the team that they were in 2023 and even in 2024, despite the way that season ended. And I thought it was refreshing to hear Brad say that they clearly put an emphasis on the offensive line this offseason, even at the expense in some ways of the defense. And, like, you can argue if you want with the personnel. I tend to think that Cade Mays is a pretty stable floor with a high ceiling. I don't feel as great about Larry Borum as a starting tackle, but I do think it is valid that the Lions put the offensive line at the top of their agenda this offseason, when that was the very engine of their rise in the first place. Even when they had, say, a league average or even below average defense at best, they were able to ride the offensive line to, you know, 30 minutes of the Super Bowl. And then, you know, I know I've said it before, but, like, the addition of DJ Wanham along with those corners and DBs who can defend the run should help them reestablish a defense that can, on some weeks to most weeks, make offenses one-handed. And again, that's what they did in 23-24. And I think Brad said, like, we need to be a defense that stops the run first. And again, you can argue with the approach, you can argue with the personnel, but I came away from that interview feeling really strongly that when Dan Campbell said at the end of last season, like, we want to kind of get back to the things that we did well or the way we operated in 22-23, they made a point to do that in the player acquisitions they made so far this offseason.
Jess, I think your mic's muted.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thanks, fellas. I got through some Borum tape the last couple of days because, you know, I think when you saw the money, you kind of knew that they were, I'd say, penciling him in for starters, maybe the best way to put it. You don't pay a backup generally $5 million or a guy that's planned to be a backup. And so I wanted to see, I knew Brad would, you know, express some belief in him. He did. I feel like they kind of got a good fit for what they're about, you know, in the quick passing game, I think he holds up really, really well in protection. I think he protects the speed rush really well, and that's going to, you know, bode well for the play action game for Goff as a pocket passer. And I know, like, the run blocking and PFF says average, and the reason that is there's just, you know, there's a couple really bad reps every game, you know, just something where he's whiffing or getting chucked by a defensive tackle. But that also means there's about 25 really solid reps a game. And he does some things really well on that front too, in terms of getting on the move. He kicks out really well on the edge for that B gap between the center and tackle. I'm sorry, between the guard and the tackle. And, you know, I just walked away from it going, I think they kind of got a pretty damn good value in this player filling a need for, you know, a lower price than you really would have expected to get a starter in this league.
Yeah, and then on the point of the vertical stacking, staying with the offensive line, I thought he was pretty justified in the way he explained that market. And maybe he wasn't speaking about this position specifically, but again, as Colton said, like it felt as he was discussing the vertical stacking and the differences in players as it relates to money versus performance, that he was talking about Linderbaum setting the market for centers at $27 million per year, and then Cade Mays signing for $8.3 million per year. And like, is Linderbaum really $20 million better per year than Cade Mays? No, probably not. He might be $5 to $6 to $7 million better per year. And I thought, you know, that ends up looking like a pretty shrewd investment. And I appreciated how Brad specified the need for the Lions to have a big, heavy anchor in the middle of their offense, which is built around a highly immobile quarterback who needs a clean pocket and needs time to see the field. And look, like Jared imposes limitations on this offense that other quarterbacks might not. He also supplies his strengths that a lot of quarterbacks don't have. But I thought the Lions went into the center market looking for a, you know, a particular player, not just a well-regarded player, but one that would be able to solidify the middle of that unit in front of a quarterback who needs time and can't create with his own feet. And so I thought, when you look at some of the other center contracts handed out, like Cade Mays has a chance to end up looking like really good value. I don't feel as great about saying the same thing for Larry Borum when, as we've mentioned, guys like Rashid Walker sign for less than that with the Panthers. But like, the Lions are placing a bet on Larry Borum if they do indeed start him next season, and we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah,
we'll grab you, Jeff. Go ahead, Colton.
I was just gonna say, I really like the point about needing a bigger center that can anchor, because, you know, that's something that we had kind of discussed on the show, but it was interesting to hear from Brad himself that that's something that they were targeting. I think the Lions allowed the second fastest average time to pressure in the NFL last season. And a lot of that came from the interior. So getting a guy that can shore up that middle center position on your offensive line is huge. And so bringing in him, and also I thought it was interesting that he talked so highly of Larry Borum at right tackle specifically. You know, he mentioned, yeah, he's played left tackle in the past, he's played guard, but it was really that tape at right tackle that really caught our attention, kept him at the top of our list when we were looking at these tackles. That really pointed to Penei Sewell moving to left if they end up starting Borum and maybe they don't get a tackle in the first round. That's kind of where my mind goes. And I know that's been talked about a little bit, but to hear that from Brad, just basically hype up this guy as a right tackle, it'd be a little weird if he just goes into the season playing left tackle. So I guess you never know, but I'm kind of viewing him as a right tackle now, and that means Penei Sewell would shift to left. And I think when you start getting into that conversation, I think you can hide Larry Borum at right tackle. Like, typically you put your lesser of the two tackles at right. Now when you have a Taylor Decker and then a rookie Penei Sewell, you can kind of do what you want there. But putting Penei back on the left side where he played in college, I think you feel pretty good about that, and you could hide Borum on that right side. And even if you don't go tackle in the first round, which I still think they should do, and I know a lot of people would agree with that, but if you can get, like, Manga Ioni, like, if you can get him at, you know, 17, and then you plug him in at left guard, then you're talking about four or five spots you feel really good about. And if your weakest spot is your right tackle, I think you can hide him. And then you're kind of built for the future with at least four of those spots. That wouldn't be the worst thing if we're talking short term for 2026. So the fact that he mentioned Borum as a right tackle and watching the tape from him as a right tackle in Miami last year, that's kind of what piqued his attention, piqued his interest. That kind of stood out to me as well.
Yeah, I also feel like Mays has the most room to grow at center of any center that signed this offseason. And maybe that's why the Lions got him at the value they did. He doesn't have a ton of demonstrated elite play at center, but the Lions believe that it's in there. And I think if you look at some of the other centers that signed this offseason, like they've probably either reached or come pretty close to their ceiling there. Like Tyler Biadasz, who signed with the Chargers for, I think it was $10 million per year. Like he's a good stable player, but that's what he is. He's not going to in any way outperform his play from last season or potentially outperform that contract. You could probably say the same thing for Elgton Jenkins, who signed, I think, for $12 million per year with Cleveland. I don't want to say there's no upside in like Connor McGovern's game or Linderbaum's game, but I think of the contracts that were handed out to centers this offseason, Cade Mazes probably has the best chance to age really well over the course of that 3-year deal. Like there's just a lot more ceiling for him to reach as a guy who's only played center for like parts of two seasons in the NFL and has shown that he can do the things from a pass protection standpoint and even to in some degree to a run blocking standpoint that this offense, the Lions offense, seems to really value. And I think they took that into account as well.
I really want to get to Terrion Arnold before we have to bounce today, but I do want to hear kind of what was the big takeaway for Jeff.
Yeah, I think you guys nailed it. I think for me going into it, just clarity on maybe some of the guys' roles, I think were very important. I think the biggest thing I heard when Larry Borum was signed is he was Dan Skipper's replacement. But looking back, it sounds ridiculous considering they would address Dan Skipper's replacement before their starting tackle who they departed with. So I guess getting clarity on what or how he feels about Larry Borum, I think was big time for the fans and just kind of understanding what they expect out of Larry Borum. And then the other thing, like Isaiah Pacheco, another one, I think people look at him as like trying to compare him to David Montgomery when in fact his role is not going to be the same as David Montgomery. And I think you see that on the price point. Like you bring up Cade Mays compared to Tyler Linderbaum. I kind of used the same point when I mentioned the Isaiah Pacheco signing when I first broke it down. It's like, is he one third the player that Rico Dowdle is? I would say no. Obviously, the injuries have question marks with Isaiah Pacheco, but he's not going to be a guy that gets the same amount of carries. Or I guess I should say not last year, but typically as David Montgomery, they understand it's probably going to be the Jahmyr Gibbs show. So I think clarity for some of those 1-year deal signings that people maybe were skeptical about, I don't know if they feel better or worse after Brad Holmes kind of spoke about some of those things, but I think that was important. And then the other thing I'll add is, I guess just doubling down on the fact that he does want to extend these guys. Yeah. And what I mean by that is Brian Branch coming off the Achilles injury. And I think his confidence level that Brian can maybe return to form. I know modern medicine has changed a lot of things in the NFL and just in sports in general, but hearing him kind of reiterate that, yeah, we do want to try and keep all these players from that draft class. Cause I guess going into the interview, you're like, there's just no way, you know, looking at Jahmyr as the highest paid running back, Jack Campbell, probably the highest paid linebacker, you know, Sam Laporta, if he looks good, you know how good of a tight end he is. Same with Brian Branch. So I think getting the kind of confirmation, it does tie back into the financial stuff of why they're operating the way they're operating, considering they want to give four guys essentially top of the market deals, or at least near top of the market deals. So I think that should have been a big takeaway for fans as well. Like Brad is always operating in the future, but hearing him speak, you're like, this is a huge priority for sure, which is probably why they didn't restructure as many deals as maybe people expected, like Amon-Ra and Penei Sewell. So those two things stood out to me on top of what you guys said.
I'm glad you said that, Jeff, because I think – sorry, real quick, Justin. I just want to present to you guys, I think, a question that has been posed to me or posed in the comments most frequently since the interview, which was, you know, I think some people wish we had asked Brad, and maybe we should have in hindsight, did they ever consider restructuring not just Jared this year, but also Penei and Saint? And I think Jeff just did a good job of answering it. Like, that would make it probably impossible and infeasible to – extend the guys they want to extend this year when, yeah, you might be creating more cap room this year, but you're increasing those cap hits in 27, 28, 29, 2030. And so maybe that question was answered by Brad when he was talking about their commitment to getting those four guys extended. But I don't know, like Colton, J-Raj, I guess how would you most succinctly answer that question? Like, why not restructure Penei and Saint along with Jared?
Perfect setup for what I was kind of going to get at anyway, Will. So it's great. I've been kind of digging into the numbers and I'm still not quite there where I can, you know, piece it all together, but if you look at kind of the way the roster is structured, both in 2026 and then going on, like the Lions have like this top 10, top half of the roster, top 10 salary cap hits, top 15 salary caps, top 20 salary cap hits. They're in the top 10 of all those, often case top five. And then you look at money or financial commitments for 27, 28, 29, and 30. They're top five in 2030. And mind you, some of these numbers are going to change because guys are going to, you know, get released or cut or whatever, but they're second in cap responsibility or cap hits for 2030 already for these, you know, big star players, the Hutchinsons, the Sewells, the St. Browns, the Goffs that they've already committed money to. And so you're going to hit a fresh wave of those guys. When you extend those four guys, all those big, big cap hits are going to be in 2030. So if you're now going to restructure and push more money back with Sewell, more money back with St. Brown, like you're just hindering your spending power in the future, whether it's 2030 or 2028. And so you're really asking, are you willing to go all in on 2026 and have to make some really tough decisions, letting go of some really, really good players? And I bring it up all the time. It's just, it's the convenient example because they did, like, that's what the Saints did, right? They went all in at the end of Drew Brees' career. They kept pushing money back, kicking can down the road, and now they're going through just a hellacious period in their franchise. I think they still have more than $100 million dead this year. Like, it's really, really hard to keep pushing money back and maintaining a sustainable roster. And people are going to counter with the Rams. The Rams did it. The Rams did it. I think they're the anomaly. I think that they absolutely nailed some of their draft picks that they did have in the mid rounds, and your Pukas and your Kyren Williams and your Byron Youngs. Like, if you feel like you can do that, like, great, it's sustainable, but there's a reason other teams don't do it and haven't done it successfully. Just because one team has done it successfully doesn't mean it's the best course of action for anyone else.
I remember, I think it was maybe about a year ago, I was talking with Nick Baumgartner, and we brought up like the seven like extension eligible guys. It was like Kirby, Hutch, J-Mo, and then the four 2023 guys, like those seven players. And I think we were having a discussion. We're like, how many of those guys can they keep, or how many guys realistically can they? I think Brad's trying to keep all of them. Mm-hmm. And I thought that before he said that, to us on Tuesday, and especially feel that way after the fact. And like, I think he's doing the right thing. I know people are mad that they don't have money to sign free agents, but like, if those guys hit the open market, they would be making what the Lions are planning to pay them or have paid those guys because they're good football players. And so you have to build around your core player. Those are young guys that you know what they're all about. You've drafted them, you've watched them develop. Like, I totally understand why they've done it this way. Now, some of those contracts probably haven't aged as well, like the Kirby injury. That's kind of unfortunate. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see with Branch and Laporta. They've got some injuries, but maybe that helps them maybe save some money if they want to get something done this offseason with those guys while they're still kind of working their way back. So they're keeping these guys because they know what they're about. And when that happens, you have to plan for that. And they get these deals done early so they can manage the cap for future years. They don't want to go into free agency. And like when Aleem McNeil, he played his last year and they extended him in October. If they didn't, he would have hit free agency the next offseason and they would have had to get into a bidding war to keep him. So assuming he didn't get hurt. But that's kind of how they operate. They're like, let's get this done now. We'll save some money in the process and we'll see how much money we have after the fact and just keep operating with this rolling 3 to 5 year budget. So I think they're smart for doing that. I don't know why this narrative has changed all of a sudden that like they shouldn't be doing that. Cause when they were getting a lot of those deals done earlier, they were getting praised for it. And all of a sudden it's a bad thing that they're keeping their young players. So a little bit odd. I don't know why this term, maybe it's just the 9-8 season, but I think they have a chance to bounce back this year just based on schedule and a few tweaks here.
Well, I think it's because Kirby's contract now doesn't look like a great move, and Aleem's contract now you can put a question mark on. And those are injuries that, certainly in the case of Aleem, you couldn't predict, and it's one in the case of Kirby. I don't think anyone could predict that either. But yeah. I guess to answer your question, Colton, like, it's easier to look back in hindsight when those guys get hurt or don't perform well and say, well, they struck too early. It's part of why I do wonder if like the Lions would be best served just waiting on the same Aleem timeline for extensions for Sam and Brian. I don't think they're all that inclined to do that. It sounds like Brad would just as soon get those done now. But to me, I would pay the, call it a certainty tax, of knowing those guys are back to themselves, and have that assurance that they'll be those healthy players you need them to be if you're going to make those 3 to 4 year commitments.
And I think that makes sense because those guys are hurt right now. When Aleem was balling out, he got that extension.
Yeah,
the money would have been there. Kirby was coming off an All-Pro season, so a little bit different of a situation.
Yeah,
I agree. Jeff, I'm going to steal the point guard role from you here for a second because I know we're crunched for time, if you will. But I don't know if you guys got a chance to read the Detroit News, Terry and Arnold update, but just a lot of text messages from the situation down there. Many of them mentioning his name kind of as part of the organization of the plot, if you will. But I think the way I'd probably characterize it, very, very legal terms coming up here, is a lot of smoke, no smoking gun. Right. Like it's still going to be a he said, she said situation. And, you know, ultimately you're probably going to need one of those people that have been charged to flip on him for this to turn. But, you know, we did ask Brad about it. Right. And I honestly expected a no comment and we got a little bit more than that from him. And I'm appreciative of that. But he said he's a pessimistic planner. Right. Mm-hmm. So
I like that.
Yeah, it's a great, you know, always preparing for the worst outcome. Right. And so, with that in mind, how early do you expect this team to draft a cornerback as insurance this year?
Well, it's the old take is time though. Need best player available because this is where it gets tricky. It's like I want to have conversations about like what they need, but I mean, and I think to be fair, like if you want to talk about best player available, there are some corners here in the first two rounds that you probably could argue could be worth the selection. I know there's versatile DBs that you could argue would be worth the selection. And I think that's really the only angle I'll take on. I'll let you guys go. Like, I think there's going to be some guys here in the top two rounds that are probably labeled as BPA that play corner. Now past that, maybe they do take a guy later in the rounds like they did in years past. You know, usually they can look to take one later. I don't know, but they go maybe an Ennis Rakestraw move again where it's a second round corner. But yeah, there's some good corners in this draft. So you can definitely argue that.
Go ahead, Colton.
Yeah, that's a good question. Cause I really, like I just did a big board today. I think there was one outside corner. I think it was Brandon Cease from South Carolina. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but he was like, I started looking at corners after we talked to Brad. Like, I probably need to like study this position a little bit more just in case they need to get one with Terion's situation. So, I mean, I'm looking at it a little bit more. It's hard to say, right? Like, they're going to take the best player available. I think maybe first round you can say best player available at one of these positions, like edge or tackle. When you get a little bit beyond then, it's, you know, the board opens up a little bit more and then you can maybe do what you want. But I think it's going to depend on the talent available at pick 50, pick 118, 128. You know, I think it's going to matter a little bit with that.
I'd be pretty shocked if they spent a first or second round. I'll go so far as to say even a day one or day two pick on corner, because I think that they think that they have fortified themselves enough at corner between Roger McCreary and the return of Ennis Rakestraw to get by through at least this season with what they have on the roster. So I would not be surprised to see them invest there on day three. But like when we asked Dan last year about Ennis, he made the point almost out of the blue that they like Ennis more on the outside and never really got to see a whole lot of that. But that's still kind of like rattling around my brain. And I think Brad mentioned on Tuesday that they liked what McCreary showed on the outside when he played there for the Rams down the stretch last year. I know he was more of a nickel for the Titans, but I think he performed pretty well on the outside for the Rams. So, you know, I don't think they would think they would be pressed into needing to take a corner on day one or day two with the addition of McCreary and the return of Ennis. But that might be putting way too much stock into two like highly volatile assets, I guess.
Still a Brock Yassin as well too, so.
A good point.
First, I wonder if like a Mansoor Delane falls. Like, what do you do there in that type of situation? I guess
it's a great question. I mean, that's absolutely a BPA conversation, right? Yeah. Like, that's a really talented player that schematically fits what they do. You know, I haven't dug into all the character background and football character background of him, but like, he's got the swag and the physicality that they really like that position. And I don't know. It's a strange situation. Obviously, there are a lot of unknowns right now, but it's weird having to go through an off season of uncertainty. I think again at the cornerback position after, you know, kind of what they had to go through with Cam Sutton a couple of years ago, like it just adds a wrench, you know, the whole idea of best laid plans. Like it just doesn't matter sometimes the way we've talked about the safety position, like that was the best safety tandem. Suddenly it was blown to smithereens. So, you know, I'm of the opinion that I think if there's a cornerback there that makes sense in the second round, I think it is more on the table now than I did maybe a week ago.
Yeah. Stay tuned. We'll talk probably more about it closer as we get to kind of to the draft here. For those who tuned in, we appreciate you. Hope you enjoyed.
I got one more thing for you boys. And because Colt and I were talking about this when we were kind of wrapping things up in the Lions media room on Tuesday. Jeff, when you asked Brad his level of confidence in the defense getting to a Super Bowl caliber or an elite caliber, it struck me that the very first thing Brad Holmes said was Kelvin Shepard. We believe in this defense with Kelvin Shepard. And maybe he had no other choice in an offseason where they only made one meaningful addition on the defensive side of the ball. But it seems to me like they are really viewing Shep as an asset. Like I explained it to Colton, like they're almost viewing him like the first round pick who flashed a bit as a rookie, and they're expecting a high jump in year two out of him. And you know, I think that from Dan to Brad, they view Kelvin Shepard as like an ascending piece to this defense as much as maybe some of the players. And again, wrong or right, I just think they're putting a lot of stock in Shep becoming, you know, one of the, as he likes to say, defensive gurus around the NFL. Do you guys get that same impression?
They're looking for that year one to year two jump.
Hey, man, someone's got to make it.
I mean, that's what it feels like, right? He was very complimentary of Shep, and they did not make any defensive staff changes after a year where they finished, I think, 22nd in scoring defense. And I think some of that speaks to the injuries they had. Really, the last few years, there's been a lot of injuries that have kind of like stunted the growth and, I guess, the ceiling of this defense and what it can be. But they really, really believe in Shep. I agree with you, Bertie. That was one of my takeaways from that interview. And if we're to believe Shep, I think someone told him that he was the runner-up in the Dolphins job. So
yeah,
I think he's going to be on these NFL radars. Like if he keeps ascending and keeps developing as a DC, just as the first-round pick would, I think he can really land one of those head coaching jobs. It's just a matter of time, I think. And he's really got to get the defense on the right track. Like it's easy to say that just based on, you know, some of the interviews, some of the looks he's gotten, but he needs to continue on that trajectory. And take a step back, you can fall off the radar quickly. So this will be a big year for him.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting before we end, like when Brad said after the 9-8 season missing the playoffs, it was an evaluation from the top down. I think there's definitely a part of Brad Holmes that looks at maybe the run defense or some of the slip ups defensively. And I think he takes accountability more so from the fans. Like for me, you know, we're looking at Kelvin Shepard, like what's going on here? You know, what's going on schematically? I think there's definitely a part of Brad where he feels like maybe they didn't, you know, maybe give Kelvin Shepard maybe enough tools, or the injuries had enough to play or had an effect on the coaching there. So, you know, I think they look at it as, hey, he still has a ton of potential. We'll see if that kind of comes to fruition here. He definitely showed things. I mean, the Buccaneers game, you got the Legion of Whom. That was fun. You know, that was a fun week. So we'll see, but we'll be back next week to talk more Detroit Lions as we kind of inch, like I was saying, closer to the NFL draft. Plenty of storylines to discuss. If you're watching, hit the like button, subscribe, and all the support's been appreciated. You could also follow our Twitter at LionsHMA. Go check out our Twitter as well. Follow. Clips are posted there. And yeah, you can turn on notifications as well. So when we go live, you get alerted. We'll catch you guys next week. But until then, we will catch you all.
Peace.